You are listening to Girovagando by the Cycling Podcast. Today we are in Padova.
Cozze ci tene, cozze, cozze vicine, nu spigudeci cora, nu spigudeci cora. Cozze ci tene, cozze, cozze vicine, nu spigudeci cora, se nu mangiano le femmine.
Cin cin.
Cin cin, Daniel.
Buonasera.
Buonasera. I feel it's been a while that you've actually called me Barone. What's that all about?
Should we reinstate that?
No, I mean, I never had it like taken away.
We'll reinstate that. Il Barone, we are in Padova and you have committed the cardinal sin of not drinking the local speciality, at least as far as beverages are concerned.
I'm anticipating drinking red wine from where we're going tomorrow in Friuli.
Brian's got the red wine. I have got a spritz, or spritz, as they're called here, Aperol spritz. Aperol born in Padova in 1919, Brian.
So you would have ordered a select, wouldn't you?
Yeah, we've had that. We've had that, haven't we, in previous years? We've explained that, the sort of connoisseurs.
Spritzism.
Aperitif spritz is a select spritz. It's a red spritz. Select was born in Venice in 1920, so it actually came after Aperol, but Aperol is the world famous one. It's become sort of popularized over the last years. I've actually had sort of tentative conversations with some people about importing Select to the United Kingdom.
It is this is not sponsored. I think it's a better product. It's certainly a more beautiful bottle.
Yeah. Brian, we're in a city that's very, very close to my heart. It's the city I first lived in Italy, the first city I lived in. 1999, we are just a short distance from Prato della Valle, which is a huge square we talked about last night. Various claims about it being the biggest square in Europe, the second biggest square in Europe after Red Square. I read various things today about it being the fifth biggest, first biggest, second biggest. It's a big old square, and it's not even really a square. It's this sort of oval-shaped, landscaped area. Very, very beautiful. I actually thought it looked less beautiful today than it normally does because of all of the sort of machinery involved with the Giro d'Italia, the zone technique, where all the sort of TV compound is. But I'm sure people watching on television will have been able to appreciate some of its beauty today.
I think it's the most delightful setting for a stage finish I've seen in a larger town, because sometimes for obvious reasons they have to push it a little bit away from the exact center, but this is the exact main center. We're sitting on the main artery where spritz is flowing down the streets, and if you didn't know any better you would think it was Friday.
Yeah, it's a great city. It's a really beautiful city. It's a city that doesn't get as much credit as I think it deserves. When people come to this part of Italy, obviously they make a beeline for Venice. One thing, Brian, that does Padova a disservice is that the train station is quite a long way from where the really beautiful stuff starts.
A bit like Bologna.
Yeah, and it's sort of a 1 kilometer walk from there into the nicer part of town, the really historic part of town. With Padova is blessed with four or five really beautiful piazzas, squares, Prato della Valle being only one of them. It's a university town, a very famous university town. There are a lot of students out, a lot of young people. It's a really vibrant place. Mention the university, Brian. The university is one of the oldest in the world. Again, the stats about this are quite oblique. The university first opened in 1222, which I think
Bologna is older than that.
I was about to ask you, it makes it the fifth oldest in Europe. Can you name the oldest four? Bologna, you've already named one. That's the oldest. That was founded in 1088.
I would say maybe Cambridge, Oxford,
and the other one's tough.
Yeah, Trier in Germany, maybe.
Salamanca in Spain.
Salamanca. Okay.
Salamanca in Spain. Yes. As I said, Brian.
Hey, that's not bad.
That was excellent. That was excellent.
More than a new preview stage winners here.
Just find a bit of local colour before we get on to the Processo alla Tappa. Brian, I said we finished in Prato della Valle. The race finished there. And as you said, it's fantastic that the Giro d'Italia can has the luxury of going into the heart or going to one of the great landmarks of a city like this.
I mean, if this is the heart, last night we were at the Ingrown Toenail.
Yeah. That's a very, don't be unkind to the people of Seren de Grappa, who will feature in tomorrow's podcast when we talk about Monte Grappa. But Brian, I think back to last few years, for example, Tour de France finishes in Nîmes, a beautiful city in the south of France, and we are stuck out in the boonies.
Fourth roundabout.
Yeah, next to a
industrial shoe
next
shop.
Next to a Mr. Bricolage and a Leclerc. Same happens in Valence now with the Tour de France when we go there. So it's fantastic that the Giro was able to come here, and Padova has not hosted, Prato della Valle has not hosted a stage of the Giro for 24 years.
Wow.
And the crowds were fantastic despite sort of fairly, well, inclement forecasts, which, you know, came to, well, it transpired to be just as bad as the forecast after the stage. About half an hour after the stage, but it was pretty good when the riders arrived. And Brian, just last thing, Prato della Valle, you'll have noticed the statues there. There's been a bit of polemica. We'll get to the polemica of the day early. There's been polemica recently. Remember in Trevi, I mentioned the fact that there were 240 streets in Trevi and none of them were named after women. Same thing has happened here in Prato della Valle. None of the 78 statues in Prato della Valle are women. And there's been a campaign recently to rectify that. And there's a campaign particularly to have a statue dedicated to a lady called Elena Lucrezia Cornaro Piscopia. She was the first woman in the world to get a degree. And it was from the University of Padova in 1678. I don't think it's happened yet, but I think it might well happen in the next couple of years. Brian, that was a lot of local colour. But as befits a city, you know, as I said, where... I have very, very fond memories linked to this city. Brian, let's get to the Processo alla Tappa.
Il Processo alla Tappa, the post-stage inquisition.
Brian, we've established we're in Padova. Where were we this morning? Where did the stage start from and how long was it, please?
Well, Daniel, the stage was 178 kilometres. It started in Fiera di Primiero and it finished here in Padova.
And how long was the stage, Brian?
178 kilometres.
Were there any non-starters this morning, DNSs?
Yes, there was, Daniel. There was one from Astana, Scaroni.
Scaroni, who anyone who's followed this Giro d'Italia will know, has worn the blue jersey on a few occasions. I don't think he's led the King of the Mountains competition ever, but he has been wearing the blue jersey once or twice. Brian, were there any breakaways today?
Yeah, Daniel, there certainly was. And it went relatively early, at least most of it. So Miguel Honoré, Mirko Maestri, and Andrea Pietrobon, Filippo Ferrelli went away 20 kilometers into the stage. And this is not often that this happens, with 60 kilometers to go, they were joined by Eduardo Affini. They were, however, and I'm not really jumping to conclusions here because not much else did happen, they were caught 10 kilometers from the finish and the, I suppose, fairly predictable gallop towards the finish line here in Padova. As often happens with those, you see these sprinter trains, the lineups coming in, and it really looked as if Little Trek had nailed it off once again. There were a couple of, especially two corners before the very straight, quite wide avenue, I would almost call it, coming into Padova here. And Jonathan Milan, the sprinter of Little Trek, actually got caught behind. And he did quite the effort just to get back into contention again. But it wasn't enough. I think he had his wind a little bit too much out in the nose. And Tim Merlier was actually the stage winner today. And Melier wasn't actually also one of the best plays, because in the second last corner, he was somewhat behind, but he caught back on again. Second on the stage, Milan first, Melier third.
Caden Groves. Fourth, Alberto Dainese, the local hero, or the would have been local hero. He's from Abano Terme, which is just to the south of Padova.
Who apparently sprinted in a very, very high gear.
He was quite tightly wound after the finish line, because obviously he was eyeing victory in his home city. fourth is a decent result, but I thought Matteo Trentin did an incredible job to get him close to the front. They didn't have enough riders in their train for Dainese to be dropped off.
They invested in that sprint.
Yeah, they didn't have enough riders to sort of take him to 200 metres to go or 300 metres to go, but Trentin got him right up there alongside Little Trek with sort of 800 to go. Cofidis's Polish sprinter Aniołkowski was fifth, Gaviria sixth, and Mads Michels of Intermarché was seventh. Caleb Yoon was eighth, Davide Ballerini ninth, and Juan Sebastian Molano was in 10th place. Brian, where did that leave us on the various classifications?
We have to go all the way down to 27th spot in GC to see any changes. I'm not going to do that. Points competition, Tim Elliott obviously cashed in some points, but is still led by Jonathan Milan with 127 points down to second spot, Caden Groves. Tim Mellier is up to third spot, six coming into today. He's 143 points next to, Jonathan Milan leading with 327. No changes in the climbers jersey, no changes in the young riders jersey. So there we are. So Daniel, at this time of the podcast, I usually ask you, and I will again today.
Tradition dictates. Tradition ordains that, yes.
Yes, marginal Dane.
Yes.
Daniel, who did you talk to today? Quite a few, I have the impression of.
Brian, I suppose, well, we'll hear from three people. We'll hear from the gentleman who finished third, in fact, Caden Groves first. And in fact, I'll take this opportunity before I forget to just mention a little bit of transfer speculation. And that I happen to have heard today. I'll call it speculation, not confirmed. Hasn't been much talk about where Caden Groves is going next year. He's out of contract. However, a gentleman in a Veneto hostelry might have whispered in my ear that Bahrain Victorious could be a likely destination for Caden Groves next year. Keep your eye on that one. Bahrain Victorious, incidentally, are quite busy, I believe, in the transfer market. I heard Narvaez, from the same source, being linked quite strongly to Bahrain Victorious today. Although Chiro...
UAE.
Well, no, that's what Chiro thinks. Yeah. And I've spoken to Chiro about this. He's quite confident that Narváez is going to UAE. My source was pretty confident that he could be going to Bahrain. I'm also quite confident that Ivan Sosa of Movistar, currently a Movistar, could be going to Bahrain.
The agents are playing you and Chiro like it was a fiddle.
Anyway, Caden Groves first. We will then hear, Brian, from Mikkel Honoré, who is from Denmark. Where's he from in Denmark? Can you remember?
I think he's from Middelfart.
Okay.
I'm not too sure.
That reminds me of what you said a minute ago about having his wind. You said someone had their wind in the nose. Middelfart. Mikkel Honoré second. So, as you said, he was in the breakaway today. And also, he's kind of... what the French call Régional de l'Étape Enfant du Pays, because he knows these roads really well. His partner, his wife, I think, is from Treviso, hence one of the motivations for him getting in the break today. And then finally, we're going to hear from a director sportif, Matt White, who's a director sportif, he's more performance manager or team manager these days, of Jacob Alula, and as relates to today, Caleb Ewan, who was eighth today and has not had the best Giro d'Italia. So, Groves, Honoré, White.
Yeah, I mean, it's bittersweet. I think we did a really good job, and in the end, I got to sprint, but it was probably a bit early in the headwind. And it's quite disappointing, really. But I'm happy with the team's performance. I took it from the front, which means I can have a good sprint and not be boxed behind. But in the end, Jonathan and Tim has come with a really fast speed and they're on a good level and tough to beat.
Well, Mikkel, you were kind of on home roads today, weren't you, if I'm not mistaken? Just tell us first of all, how well do you know that area that the race went through today?
I know really well. I knew every road from kilometer 40 till the end. It was like racing on home, and special to be in the breakaway. Obviously, it was not even 100% the plan, but I saw the moment and fought back on a couple of years ago in the Giro as well, where the break made it to the end on these similar roads. So I thought I might as well just give it a go.
Yeah, we thought exactly the same thing. You're talking about the status Treviso, and I think Eduardo Affini was just patted you on the back. I think he was in the break that day as well, and he was obviously a good ally to have today.
Absolutely. I said to the other guys when I heard Edo was on the in between to wait for him. He was obviously a super strong engine to have up there, and exactly, he was in the break there that day as well, and so he knows. He knows we had a good chance, but the sprinter teams, they know the same, that they have to stay careful, and they learned the lesson from the past. So anyway, I'm happy to at least have tried. We don't get much of a gap and chance anymore in the breakaway, but you have to at least try and play with the balls of the sprinter teams.
And it didn't look as though the hope completely died until about, 15 kilometers from the finish, just before you got caught.
Yeah, exactly. You know, with today's cycling that's so fast, even a 10, 15 second gap can be quite big. And I knew if we come into the roads here, we might still have a chance. Plus, it's the last week of the Giro, and many domestiques are tired, sprinters are tired after a hard day yesterday. So you never know until the very last kilometers if they are playing with you or if they actually are just having a tough time in the back.
Matt, there was another opportunity obviously for Caleb, one of few in this Giro. Top 10 and he finished, I think, 8th. Yeah. But how do you judge today's performance and also just generally how the Giro's gone for him?
Yeah, look, not as planned. I think his condition during the race has been really good as far as his cruise through the mountain stages. He's never actually tried to finish the Giro before. Obviously, this has always been a stepping stone to the Tour, which it's not this year. We'll sit back and analyse post-race. But I think his run into this race, condition-wise, has been good. But I think there's something definitely lacking there as far as top end and snap.
Have you been surprised, or do you think the guys have been surprised by just how good some of these trains have been and also how powerful Milan, for example, has been?
Yeah, well, today's another example. I think Milan was about 14th wheel with 400 and 300 metres to go today and still lost in a photo. Yeah. So, obviously, Trek have been the dominant force here in as far as the lead-outs. They didn't get it right today. The train was set up ready to go without their sprinter, and he still nearly won. So, no, he's a beast. And really head and shoulders above most people here. Okay, Merlier's got him twice, but he's been definitely the best sprinter.
It's always really difficult to balance GC, stage hunting and sprinting, I know. Was that a difficult decision? I think he's got one man more Milan for the lead-out train, say, than Caleb has.
Yeah.
Was there a big conversation about that, what to do with that sort of last man, I suppose, and whether to bring another guy?
Yeah, well, we've only ridden one day out of 7 anyway. So, you know, our guys have got away with it pretty easy as far as the workload they've had to do on the sprint stages, because no one's really looking for us to ride. It is a tricky mix, but at the end of the day, we're coming here with a sprinter who's chasing his form, chasing wins, and Eddie Dumba, who's a guy who's, you know, predicted to finish maybe 5th to 10th. Instead, we're there with Zana. So, I think it depends on who you're taking. You know, obviously, if you're a GC team fighting for the podium, then you put a little bit more emphasis in your climbing stock. And if you had a guy who's winning a lot of races and going in with a good run, like Quickstep, like Trek, they're coming here with pretty much the sole goal of supporting their sprinters win as many stages as possible.
The cycling podcast at the 2024 Giro d'Italia is supported by MAP, cycling apparel.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by MAP, who are our clothing partner, of course. And you may have seen from social media that Daniel is wearing the MAP casquet on his morning runs over there in Italy. Meanwhile, I'm here in the UK, where the weather has gone from scorching hot and sunny one day to grey, cool and overcast the next. And it means that I've got through pretty much my full wardrobe of MAP clothing over the past few days. Now, the other day I talked a bit about MAP's new Alt-Road collection, which takes the durability and comfort of the looser-fitting gravel-style clothing, but makes a really versatile range that crosses over very happily to the road. Sometimes, of course, you want to dress like a pro and pretend you're part of the Giro peloton. Perhaps you're doing a long road ride, or you're going out on the evening or weekend chain gang, or you're doing a sportive type event and you want to look and feel like you're part of the peloton. Well, with summer on its way and the promise of some really warm days, fingers crossed, take a look at MAP's new Eclipse Air Pro jerseys, which fit tightly like a second skin, but without feeling uncomfortable and oppressive. They're very, very wearable, lightweight mesh material, increased breathability and airflow that will keep you cool in the heat and keep you dry on the descents. More importantly, you don't want to get a chill when you're going downhill after all that exertion on the way up. The jersey and bib shorts that go with the jerseys give you that comfort for long days in the saddle, or more importantly, when you're on the limit holding the wheel or putting in an attack. So the Eclipse Pro Air range is new for men and women, and there's a range of matching accessories as well. So check it out at map.cc. That's MAAP.cc.
Well, Brian, plenty to chew on there from Michael Honoré. Incidentally, Brian, the accent on the E, does that mean, are we to assume that Michael Honoré has French parent?
No. Nope, that's perfectly normal.
What does the accent do in Danish? What purpose does it serve? Because in French it dictates, you know, whether it's a kind of an open or a close.
So the correct pronunciation of his name in Danish would be Mikkel Frølich Honoré.
And what would it be if there was no accent on the E?
Mikkel Frølich Honoré.
Okay, so it serves absolutely no purpose.
Nothing, yeah.
So it's completely redundant.
And now, corrections corner, he is from Fredericia.
Okay.
But that is a mere stone's throw from Middelfart.
Okay, no farting there. Brian, we heard from Honoré, we heard from Matt White, and we heard from Caden Groves. Let's start with the sprint itself, shall we? Little Trek, they did a fine job, as you mentioned. They've had the best train here easily, haven't they? I was speaking to another Dane a few days ago on the rest day, Alexander Kamp, and he talked about how good Dan Hooler had been in this.
You know, that's also one of those things, unless someone like him mentioned it, or you know, it's that type of work. Often it's, you know, obviously the sprinter that gets all the honors, especially when they win, and all the lead out in the last guy. But there's a middleman there that sometimes I think gets a little bit lost in the performance translation, because it's a very important role. Because if they miss, whatever the next two guys do is pretty irrelevant.
And we have seen some slightly underpowered lead out trains, haven't we? And I touched on it there with Matt White, of course. They hedged their bets, and Matt, you know, he admitted it there, that it's very difficult for them. You know, they had no one who was going to win general classification, but they've obviously committed to a project with Eddie Dunbar. I suppose the one sort of free electron they've brought here is our friend Alessandro De Marchi. And, you know, I suspect that was the sort of eighth place in the team, and they deliberated whether to bring another climber or whether to bring someone for the lead-out train. They brought someone instead who was a breakaway specialist, is a breakaway specialist. I happen to think he's got a bit of a chance tomorrow. We'll talk about that later.
It's really been Filippo Sana who's been their rider in this Giro, hasn't it? He's now ninth, but he looks like he could potentially even finish a little bit further up in the GC.
But it was a big missed opportunity for Milan, was it not? Given what we saw in the last 200 metres, the power that he has, and there is no doubt, I mean, Matt said there, he's the dominant sprinter in this Giro d'Italia. Everyone knows it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he could have walked away with, I mean, including today, he could have walked away with two other stage wins here. Yeah. But that's sprinting, isn't it? And as Mollier said as well in the in his press conference, because apparently, and I was not aware of this, there's been some criticism whether Tim Mollier could actually deliver the goods.
Well, he talks about being criticised.
About being able to deliver in the third week of a Grand Tour. And he apparently had a point to prove, to whom I do not know.
Yeah, you must be familiar with this phenomenon from your time as a press officer. Even more so now, because I think you've stopped being a press officer. Social media has taken up occupied an even bigger place in people's kind of thinking about bike racing. But often riders confuse criticism from some troll on social media with what is the general narrative, what everyone is saying about them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got, I mean, the irony is from back, and this is starting to be a long time ago, when I was a press officer in the first years at least, I remember I had to drag riders out of the bus sometimes for them to give interviews. And then with the revolution of social media, the minute they got onto the bus, they would, you know, post angry replies to John Doe and his second cousin. But yeah, I mean, in general, I think things have changed for the better. It certainly meant that riders are able to communicate directly, and they're also able to rectify certain things should there be misunderstandings.
Brian, what else did Melia tell us in the press conference?
Not much. There was actually only three questions from the Sala Stampa today. He spent time in altitude in Tata before the Giro, and it's apparently a formula that he's used before and is very happy with, quite successful. I don't know, and maybe I should have asked him that, whether he is scheduled to ride the Tour de France. Because I sort of see him as, depending on how ready Wout van Aert will be, I think he could be a decent candidate for the Olympic Games as well in Paris.
Well, Brian, unless there's been a change, and maybe we'll investigate this, we'll explore this in the next few days. Maybe our Belgian colleagues, maybe Renard from Sportsnet will help us with this. But Tim Merlier was told in the winter that he would probably not be going to the Tour de France. I think that's probably why he's still here at the Giro d'Italia.
Yeah.
He probably would have left already. Of course, the Sudal Quickstep team at the Tour de France is set to revolve around Remco Evenepoel. Merlier's had to wait a long time, hasn't he, for his chance at the Tour de France?
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, you can talk to Caleb Ewan about that as well in his first years. I think it was one of the reasons why he changed teams. Initially, he's now back at the team he switched away from. And the same would go for any team, like, say, you know, when Olaf Koy, who won the stage to Naples here, when he was quite a surprise to many that he re-signed with Visma Lisebike, because it didn't really look as if his Tour de France debut was imminent.
Well, he did ride the Tour de France in 2021 and won a stage for his previous team, Alpecin Phoenix, it was called then. But since his move to Sudal Quickstep, he has not had that opportunity. And, you know, I say that Milan has been the dominant sprinter at this Tour de France. At this Giro d'Italia. Melier's not far off.
No.
He's really not.
No, and it will be, I think the sprinter's jersey sits pretty tightly on Milan's shoulders. But it will be, I think it will be a bit of a show-off between those two in Rome, which in a lot of ways is the most prestigious sprint in this Giro, I would say.
Mm. Brian, one Tour de France for Tim Merlier. Of course, he didn't last beyond the first rest day. He was the DNF on stage 9. Brian, just on Caleb Ewan, as we heard there, Matt White feels as though, we've seen it, we've heard it from other people, that he's been climbing really well. But he's missing, Matt said, he's missing some snap. He's missing a kick. We haven't seen him involved really in the sprints, certainly in the last sort of 50 metres or so, 100 metres. Thus far, he's not really having the return to green edge that he wanted or they wanted.
It's interesting because with all the debacle that there was when he left Lotto, I think there was even speculation that I don't want to throw something in there that's not confirmed, but rumours that he might even not continue his career.
Yeah, I asked him about that. We did a long interview with Caleb Ewan at the start of the season, and he addressed that. And he said that was, in a sort of fit of pique, he was so upset with Stefan Urlo, the Lotto manager last year, and so demotivated that, in fact, he almost had stopped riding, stopped training. He didn't seriously consider retiring, but he also wasn't really thinking about the future at that point.
He did start very young, didn't he? I mean, you would never rule out a sprinter coming back, and I only say that because I can't count the times that I've probably definitively ruled out Cavendish and was, you know, happily put to shame because he has come back again and again.
Yeah, I mean, Melia and particularly Milan, more so Milan, they're such imposing physical specimens that it's almost difficult to imagine a small kind of speedy guy, a little guy with a high cadence, which is kind of what Caleb Ewan is. But to be honest, it's also what Dainese is.
Well, look at Koy.
Yeah, but Koy is sort of medium sized, isn't it? Well, he's taller than,
I mean, next to Milan, anyone is, I suppose.
Yeah, medium to large, in fact. But Yeah, I mean, that's maybe just a sort of optical illusion that you can't really imagine someone like Caleb Ewan. It's difficult to picture him in a sprint beating Milan at the moment, but, you know, that's more a statement about how good Milan has looked generally and how good his trainers look. Incidentally, Simone Consonni, who, as you said, well, they did a good job today, little trek lead out train. Jonathan Milan who sort of lost his bearings. Simone Consonni was in celebratory mood because he's a big Atalanta fan.
Oh,
of course,
yeah,
Atalanta
yeah.
won.
A lot of talk about that in the Sala Stampa today.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
Yeah? He won the Europa League in football last night. Brian, of course, we've got another press conference, as we always do. We've got the Pink Jerseys press conference. Any learnings, anything interesting from that today?
No, and that was a short one as well. And maybe I'm mistaken, but I also feel, at least, well, that's the sense I get when I listen to Pogacar, that he sort of exhausted all the questions at this point in the Giro. He did focus a lot more on Monte Grappa than the stage to Zapata tomorrow. And I think that has to do, well, that's a guess at my end, to do with that they might let a breakaway go. But he certainly has his eyes on the Monte Grappa
stage. Yeah, he's sort
stage.
Of licking his whiskers at the prospect of Monte Grappa, isn't he? Incidentally, on UAE and Pogacar, yesterday we wondered about Michael Bier, who came in last, if I'm not mistaken, yesterday. We wondered whether he might be ill. As we know, there's a lot of illness been going around the peloton. Scaroni didn't start today. I was told this morning by someone at UAE that he's simply very tired, or was yesterday. He was simply exhausted yesterday. And I think he was riding quite hard today, was he not, in the finale?
Yeah. It's also one of those things, and he actually also said, Pogacar, quite a few days ago, when I asked him how he would economize the remains of the Giro with mostly very hard stages coming up, he said, well, didn't really think about so much economizing himself, more economizing how he used his teammates.
Brian, as we established yesterday, the pink jersey is more or less, well, it's more or less secure. I think we would all agree. Incidentally, Pogacar's family, his whole family en masse were here today. I believe Tillon, his brother, the other Pogacar, who was a rider himself, older than Tadej, Barbara, his sister, his mum and dad were also at the race today. We are fairly confident that Tadej Pogacar will be the winner of the 2024 Giro d'Italia. As we said yesterday, that switches our focus to the battle for the podium positions. Of course, Dani Martinez currently, how many seconds is that? That's 22 seconds? 22 seconds ahead of Geraint Thomas on general classification. And in fourth place, Brian, is Ben O'Connor, who is 2 minutes and 5 seconds behind Martinez. And 1 minute and 43 seconds behind Geraint Thomas. Not out of it for the podium positions, but facing an uphill battle. And the road will go uphill both tomorrow and on Saturday. Brian, Ben O'Connor looked to be struggling a bit yesterday. So this morning, I tried to ascertain what had been up yesterday and how he was feeling generally, his Ben O'Connor. And Ben, this battle for the podium. Yesterday you lost a bit of time. I heard you talked about breathing problems after the finish yesterday. Any more sort of light being shed on what they were and what happened?
No, I just don't think it was my best day. I think it was far from it. So hopefully by, you know, tomorrow, Saturday, can be back up to how I felt the first 2 weeks, which was, you know, the same as G and Danny. So yeah.
Are you sort of feeling as though you haven't been done any favours by the way the route was changed 2-3 days ago? Now it obviously became a more explosive stage, and yesterday was quite explosive as well.
I wouldn't say yesterday was explosive because it was super hard all day, and you're kind of on the pedals all day, along with the tricky nature of just the course with the wet roads like pretty much the whole day. So yeah, I don't think the change in course really changed much, and in the end it was the it was how things should have been in the end. So yeah, I feel like I'm sitting where I deserve to be honest. Fourth is fair because Danny's been better and G's been more consistent.
Would you have signed for fourth before the Giro?
I'd be happy with it, but I would prefer third or second. So there's always more to be wanting, and I think Saturday is going to be really interesting with this Cima Grappa, because in the end, it's such a hard climb. It must be one of the hardest ones you can do in cycling, to be honest. So, yeah. I don't think it's going to be 20-second gaps in the end.
Just last thing, that's one number, the final position. I'm talking about other numbers in terms of sort of physiology and your numbers during this Giro, just performance wise, have you been where you want to be?
More or less, yeah. I think probably Predotivo. I had big numbers, not sure if it was right though, but yeah, I think that could have been better so far. You can get better performances, but the nature of the course hasn't really been that you've done, 20 minutes at your absolute best ever. But I actually would say explosive efforts-wise, 5 minutes, 2 minutes, been really, really good. So I think actually on that side, I've been really happy, to be honest.
So Brian, a bit of a mixed picture there from Ben O'Connor. Broadly happy with the way things are going. But I think, as we know, he came into this Giro wanting to finish on the podium. And, well, he'll be crossing his fingers and just hoping. I think something has to go wrong with Geraint Thomas or Dani Martinez for Ben O'Connor to sort of sidle in there and get either the second or third place on
the
podium.
Well, there's plenty there. There are certainly places still where that can happen.
Yeah.
That you can have a crisis and a minute on the second ascent of Monte Grappa is foreseeable, even if you're riding comfortably within the top five. But then on the other hand, Antonio Tiberi is certainly breathing down the neck of Ben O'Connor.
Yeah,
so looking at the trajectory at least.
13 is 42 seconds behind Ben O'Connor, is Tiberi. We should have mentioned that Timon Arensman had issues, didn't he? He had some kind of mechanical problem with the pedal, I think, or his chain maybe in the last 10. Was it in the last 10 kilometers?
I think
but
so. Yeah.
He was able to get back on. There was a little bit of a panic there, but he was able to get back on, and no time lost, no ground conceded there. Brian, talking about all things general classification, of course, Visma Lisa Bike haven't really been in. Well, they haven't at all. Been in the shake-up for the general classification here at the Giro d'Italia, which is a strange thing to say of the team who last year, of course, won all three major tours. Their focus at the moment, or their thoughts as far as general classification are concerned, are very much with Jonas Vingegaard, your countryman, and his recovery from that terrible crash in the Tour of the Basque Country. This morning at the start in Fiera di Primiero, Richard Plugger, the team manager, made an appearance. And, of course, he was descended upon by journalists, other journalists, as well as myself. Now, Brian, I talked to Richard, along with our colleague from GCN, Daniel Benson, about various things, safety, financial fair play. I've selected what I think is the most relevant bit of that conversation for today's Chiacchierata del Giorno, which we're about to hear, and in which we learn a little bit more about whether Jonas Vingegaard might ride the Tour de France.
La Chiacchierata del Giorno. The chin wag of the day.
Yeah, I think he's doing pretty well. However, he needs to be 100% to go there. He's a two-time winner of the Tour de France, so we have to see how it evolves in the coming weeks. So far, he's doing well. You've seen the news here and there that he's training, and also Wout is coming back. So. Yeah, we're looking into how can we go into the Tour de France with the best team possible. And because if we want to go there, we want to win it again. And so we need to be 100% with everybody who's going there. And hopefully Jonas can make that. And, yeah, but still, it's a little bit wait and see. I think, we can do a lot in training. And it's so far it's better to do a lot in to keep training, and we have to see. So the deadline is always the start of Dauphiné, for example, is a deadline. If we want him to be there or want to train, still train, because with training again, we can also reach the best level. So we have to see. And the deadline ultimately is the start of the Tour de France.
Of course. And with Wout, is he penciled in for the Tour now? Because I think when we spoke during the Classics, it was obviously too soon to really talk about it. Just I think he was still in hospital. But now, obviously, exactly. It's a few weeks on. He's going back to Norway.
He will start in Norway today. And if that's going in the right direction, then the Tour is obviously an option for us to bring him to the Tour de France. So, then we have a really strong squad again.
Wilco, Seb,
Matteo, Now it's so Stephen. It's always difficult to start mentioning names because we have many ready. Tish is there, of course.
And,
Jan is on the list, and we so far. So yeah, we have like 10 riders now. Ready to go.
First of all, don't speak to two Arsenal fans about financial fair play. That's a sore subject.
just, I didn't know you were an Arsenal fan.
Yeah, sore subject this week, especially. anything but. Okay. How difficult have the last 3 or 4 months been with just so much bad luck? I mean, how nightmarish have they felt at times?
Yeah, it's a big nightmare to see your, I said it before, to see your riders like this on the ground and in the hospital, and you know, it's boys, it's men, husbands, it's fathers of children, and yeah, we, you know, the Safer Project was really ready to go and would really be a strong company to really change things, and I have to see what is happening now with that. But we really need to do something, because it was horrific what we saw, not only for my team, but also for other teams. And you know, it's a big problem for cycling, I think. And for me, very bad to see Wout and Jonas how they were at that moment. And I'm glad that they are coming back now and we had some bad luck. It's not 3 months, by the way, but it's like 8 weeks. But yeah, we have to pick up the pace again. But it's also part of this sport, and we should find ways to that riders can crash safely instead of every time now something is happening and people are out for weeks. Again, not only my riders, but also other riders. And that's really almost traumatic for the whole sport.
Brian, Richard Plugger, what do you make of that?
Well, he's certainly less definitive about his participation than what I've seen in various media outlets. And I've also seen speculation that I was tweeting about it today, or is it called Xing about it today? And people think it's a media stunt. And in this instance, I disagree. Because, as you said yourself, as everyone should know, it was a very nasty crash. And it's not something that you just, you take a break and then you're back on the bike because of the timing. And Pogacar was actually asked about that as well in the press conference, because he himself had to come back from injury last year. And I think the most important thing that I pick up on anyways was that they're going for the win, and so how do you look at those when he says he has to be 100%? Does that mean he has to be 100% fit to defend his title? That's very fit. Or does he have to be 100% to be able to start and ride through the Tour de France and try and go for a result? And for me, that's two very, very distinctly different scenarios. Vingegaard being in what would be the shape of his life, and he will need to be very, very strong in the beginning, because the Tour de France is very hard in the first couple of stages, as we all know. Or is it just a matter of let's get him ready and see how it goes? And I interpret it as the first. He has to be ready to win for them to bring him.
Mm. Pogacar, I did overhear this in the press conference. Pogacar was asked about Vingegaard, he was certain. And I don't know whether that's based on in peloton intelligence or whether he is just sort of psychologically, it's important for him to persuade himself that Vingegaard is going to be there and that therefore he will have to be at his absolute best to beat Vingegaard.
I think that's how a lot of riders, when they prepare for the biggest goals, think anyways, that they need to be at their best because they're up against the best, and that's really the nature of the Tour de France.
Yeah. One line I enjoyed from Richard Plugger: the deadline for the deadline for knowing whether Vingegaard will do the Dauphiné is the first stage of the Dauphiné. So we will know that Jonas Vingegaard is doing the Dauphiné if he does the Dauphiné. Brilliant.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, That business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
Well, Brian, I said that it had been, how many years? 24 years since the Giro d'Italia finished in Prato della Valle in Padova. And that was quite a memorable occasion, that 2000 stage finishing here in Padova. Certainly, Brian, for a young sprinter, young tearaway sprinter by the name of Ivan Quaranta, who I believe was at the finish line today, but I didn't see him. Ivan Quaranta relived that day for us a couple of years ago, and it was quite the story.
Padova, l'arrivo di Padova.
In the 2000 Giro, there was a stage to Padova, and I'd lost all of my teammates in an echelon or something not far from the finish. There were 60, 70 riders left, and I was on my own, with no lead-out train. The last 20 kilometres were almost entirely straight, but the road was going to curve a little over a narrow bridge or a chicane 500 metres from the finish. I knew this because I'd done my homework. I'd really studied that finish. I'd said to myself that if you weren't one of the first five over that little bridge, you'd lost. The first five guys would hold their speed, and if Cipollini and his lead-out man were in that five and you weren't, you'd lose all of your momentum while they'd be going at 60 kilometres an hour. You'd need a motorbike to catch them. So anyway, I was thinking about that last corner for 20 kilometres. Then with my experience from the track and a bit of youthful abandon, I was the only guy who didn't brake on it. I'd been a bit too far back, maybe 20th position or so under the kilometre kite. Then suddenly everyone's braking, I'm leaving it to the last second, and I'm screeching around the corner, propping myself against Cipollini. His pedal's scraping the barriers and our shoulders are touching. It's bordering on an illegal manoeuvre, and in fact, I would have been disqualified had the TV cameras got a better view.
With the final chase down now, coming from Seiko, there's a sharp bend coming, and in fact, Fontanelli didn't even bother with it. He's allowed them to go through on the inside. This is looking like the perfect lead out now, but watch out for Zarate, he is third wheel here.
Se ci fosse stata una telecamera, mi avrebbero squalificato, no?
But I come out of the corner in fifth place. Saeco are leading out Mario, but I launch my sprint first and I beat him in Prato della Valle, the famous piazza in Padova.
Quaranta, who's come through on the rails, and Ivan Quaranta, what a turn of speed that man has. He came from absolutely nowhere, as he did when he won the first stage.
So I win, go up on the podium, get my flowers. Then I come back to the bus, park my bike, climb the steps, and then I see Cipollini on our bus.
Come salgo, c'era già su Cipollini. Praticamente io sono salito dal davanti, lui è salito dal dietro. In poche parole, mi sta.
So basically, while I was climbing the steps at the front of the bus, he was climbing the ones at the back. He sees me and he starts coming for me.
Mi sta avendo contro, io sono sceso, sono saltato in macchina. Via.
So I turn straight back around, jump in a team car, and off I go. He didn't even have time to open his mouth. I got the hell out of Dodge. That night we were staying in hotels 500 meters from each other and we met up. He'd calmed down a bit, but it was all still, "Hey youngster, we almost crashed, you have to be more careful, madonna cazzo."
Dopo si era calmato, cazzo però giovane, abbiamo rischiato di cadere, stai attento. Mario, cazzo.
Brian, that is a great story. It's a great story. I'm not sure it really stands up to scrutiny in the sense that, and you often come across stories like this, particularly when you're working on books about cycling history. People will tell you a fantastic anecdote, and then as soon as you start fact-checking it, there are elements that are just not plausible. And do you know what? And this didn't occur to me at the time. We first ran that in the podcast 2 or 3 years ago. And what occurred to me today was that in 2000, not that many of the teams had team buses. Mobilvetta was a small team.
Oh, and Okay, this is brilliant then.
And Mobilvetta also manufactured camping cars,
yeah,
which is what most of the small teams had. So it would be paradoxical, it would be strange or ironic if Mobilvetta, the camper van company, had a huge team bus with two sets of steps that Cipollini could have come up the back of.
Had Cipollini first entered the camper van, he would have gotten to him.
Yeah.
And knowing what we know today, that probably wouldn't have ended well.
No. Well, yeah. On a serious and pretty unpleasant note. Brian, but yeah, never let facts get in the way of a good story.
I really have a lot of respect for the forensic analysis of camper van versus team buses. Well done.
La tappa di domani e la cena di ieri. Tomorrow's stage, yesterday's dinner.
Brian, yesterday's dinner was a strange one. It felt like we were in Germany.
Yeah.
To a large extent.
Potentially even more German than you like.
Yeah, we went to a hostelry that I've visited before, the Pedavina Brewery, just outside Feltre. And the 2019 Giro d'Italia had its sort of grand finale on the climb that sort of starts at the Pedavina Brewery, and that's the Croce d'Aune, which is very, very famous in cycling history because it's where Tullio Campagnolo of group set fame first had the problem which led to the idea for the quick release skewer on I don't know whether it was a front wheel or a back wheel, because his hands were too cold and he couldn't get the wheel out, so I think that's what it was. His hands were too cold. I haven't checked this today, but anyway, Croce d'Aune, a very famous climb. Campagnolo also had a group set for a long time named after the climb, the Croce d'Aune, and we went to the Pedavina Brewery at the bottom, which is this cavernous structure, very, very popular. The beer was great, and they have their own sort of label beer called Pedavina beer, but they also have Dolomiti beer, which you might have seen abroad, the Dolomiti label, and it's a very good beer. But they also have sort of hearty kind of Brauhaus kind of fare.
I mean, they had three types of Wurstel. I've never seen.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I don't often see Wurstel on the menu in Italy.
No.
But maybe I've.
Yeah. As well as some Italian dishes, I had Spitzle, which you do get in the Tyrol, where I like to go on holiday, in the northern German-speaking part of Italy. But it wasn't. It was a sort of five out of ten.
You're one holiday away from buying a set of Lederschuhe, aren't you?
It was a 5 out of 10. But go there for the beer. If you're into your beer, you will enjoy it.
But run away because of the food.
Harsh, very harsh. Brian, tomorrow's stage, you have got a day off, a rest day, giorno di riposo, because this morning in Fiera di Primiero, I asked one of the riders who will be l'enfant du pays tomorrow, the sort of local hero, the Friulano rider, friend of the podcast, Alessandro De Marchi of Jayco Alula, to present tomorrow's stage for us. Alessandro De Marchi, you are one of the regionali della tappa of tomorrow. Could you present it for us? Tell us where it starts and where it goes and what it's like.
So first of all, of course, is the best stage of the Giro, the nicest. The start will be in Mortegliano. That's a nice place in the flat part of the region, and then slowly we will reach the first hilly part. So we will be around San Daniele, famous for the ham, and then we will get closer to the mountain. So we will hit the part of the region called Carnia.
Tolmezzo, famous for Jonathan Milan and Tiramisu.
This is a big story about Tiramisu. And so then will be mountains after Tolmezzo, as you said, and the finish will be on Sappada. That is a city really on the border with Veneto, typical Dolomitian city, place.
My prediction, my pronostico for tomorrow is that you'll be in the break.
That's something, of course, I will look for, and it could be really special, as you easily understand. And we'll see. We saw already that is already a big result to be in the breakaway. So we will see.
Devi scappare.
Brian, it's a fascinating stage in a really beautiful part of the world, a part of the world that where every time the Giro d'Italia goes there, I sort of vow to myself, promise myself that I'm going to spend some more time there. I've never sort of had a holiday there, but we're talking about the far eastern corner of Italy. A couple of years ago, we did a kilometer zero on this area of Italy, and it's, well, very interesting history, the various ways and times at which the borders have moved and linguistic borders and so on and so forth. I think it was called Frontier Land, but yeah, we're talking about Friuli. And what we often get in this part of the world in the Giro d'Italia is climbs we're not that familiar with, and very difficult climbs. And there are a couple of very difficult climbs on today's or tomorrow's route: the Passo Duron, 4.4 kilometers at 9.7%, and the Sella Valcalda, 5.4 kilometers at 6.5%, and then the more familiar climb to Sappada. And it's a difficult stage to sort of interpret, to know what's going to happen. I mean, a breakaway is going to go.
Yeah, it might take a while because it starts out relatively flat, but it is, from what I can see, 3,251 meters of climbing, but it's only 150 kilometers long, and that changes a lot, I think, the dynamics of how the stage will be ridden. And it's easier to control because it's not that long, but it's also a lot of minds fixed on Saturday stage
and
double ascent of Monte Grappa.
And Brian, whatever does happen tomorrow, Sappada, this little sort of mountain village in Friuli, will remain inextricably linked with the events of the 6th of June 1987, the 1987 Giro d'Italia. One of the great betrayals, one of the great polemicas, one of the great scandals.
The mother of all polemics.
Yeah, of Giro d'Italia history, which led to the first part of Stephen Roach's great, what did they call it, the Grand Slam? Triple Crown, that's it. He won the Giro, the Tour, and the World Championships in the same season. Now, going into that day, going into that stage, Stephen Roach was behind his team leader, Roberto Visentini. We're talking about the Carrera team. He was well behind him on general classification. And then on the descent of the Forcella di Monterest, Stephen Roach got away in a group. Behind, Visentini started to collapse, sort of psychologically as much as physically. Roach ended up gaining 5 minutes and 54 seconds. And the days that followed, the stages that followed, well, they were mired in polemica. And this bitter civil war broke out in the Carrera team. Brian, now we're going to hear a taster from an episode we did in 2017 about that Giro d'Italia, about the betrayal of Sappada. It was Stephen Roach's version of events. We called it the 1987, according to Stephen Roach. And as I said, here's a little antipasto of that episode, which you can still find online. It was friends of the podcast certainly can.
Yes, Roach, he's fourth, fifth in this little group coming in. And so that means that on the day, there's going to be a change of leadership. Now, the clock is significant. Look at this. 6:44, 45, 46. Visentini has blown it. The pink jersey's gone.
My master had to be protecting me and my food because we were afraid of somebody poisoning me. And my mechanic, Patrick Welk, had to prepare and look after my bike because they were afraid of somebody sabotaging my bike. So it was very complicated and very lonely. I was getting very, very worried because there was people trying to hit me on the climbing the climbs. There were people taking rice in their mouth in the last minute, a mouthful of wine, and spitting the wine and rice at me. Banners, Roach Bastardo, Roach Via Casa, incredible banners all over the place, and it was very, very hostile. When I finished, I had the jersey on my back for whatever it was, 4, 5, 6, 7 days, and arrived in the finish line, and I was kind of waiting for someone to give me a towel. But there's nobody there to wait for me, nobody whatsoever. And I came in, I was kind of I was a star for 5 days. I had a pink jersey in my back. I had interviews everywhere. I was, you know, I was became famous, you know. And all of a sudden then, buff, dropped. There's someone unplugged me, you know. I'll always remember, even to this day, when I walked into the restaurant, Massimo Girotto turned around to me and said, Stefano, you shouldn't have done that. And I was so upset, I turned around and walked away again. And that was the beginning of a kind of a hostile few days.
Brian, who knows? Maybe Rafa Micah will gain. How much does he need to gain on general classification? About three hours.
Tymon Arisman is more likely to do that.
Definitely a more likely candidate. Certainly, there is the potential there. They've got two riders well up on the general classification. There's certainly potential for those two to swap positions. I don't think it's going to happen. Geraint Thomas has got a healthy lead over Tymon Arisman. There's also some suggestion yesterday, Brian. We saw Arisman working for Thomas yesterday, didn't we? There was some suggestion, which we haven't verified, that there had been some sort of call to order the previous day
Thomas, I believe, denied that, didn't he?
Sorry?
I think Geraint Thomas denied that.
Did he deny that? Okay. Anyway, that is today's. That could be today's sort of conspiracy theory. If, again, as we said yesterday, you would like to go with it. Brian, I think that's about it for this evening. We're heading off into... Are we in Friuli tonight? Not quite. I think we're still in the Veneto tonight. We'll be in Friuli tomorrow. And we'll be back from Sappada. Just last thing, actually, Brian, before we go. Friuli, fantastic wine country, fantastic white wines in particular.
The reds shouldn't be underestimated either.
The reds are good as well, but do not forget that our Giro Vagando selection still available from D-Vine Sellers. That D, letter D, Vine Sellers, all one word, .com. Brian, that's about it.
Buonasera.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Byrne.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more, sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.